All right, okay, cool. So if you saw my talk last year, we quickly went over for the external data site on how we help use external data and some internal data to inform our decisions. I wanted to revisit this talk again because it's almost, I want to give a, help you understand all the different inputs that we take into account when making decisions, because the interactions I have with web developers and designers often still have these type of feedback. Why don't you have this feature? Why isn't the bug I filed fixed yet? And I almost want to write this to my former self of, if I knew when I was a web developer what I know now, I would probably work on the web platform in a completely different way, because I've now learned that your voice, if I can click it, your voice and the way you build your site has power. Doesn't matter if you're working on the largest sites or the smallest sites, it has power. And it helps shapes what and how we do. And while, yes, I work for Microsoft Edge, it's important to understand that this also impacts other browsers as well as the standards bodies, because all of us have engineering realities and constraints that we have to live within. If you would have asked me when I first started off working in web development what made a great browser, I would have told you the features. Because man, is it great to remove a polyfill or 20 lines of hacky CSS code to use CSS Grid, as Melanie was showing you earlier. But quickly, as you begin working and you begin testing, you quickly realize the features actually aren't that great if they're not interoperable. You need them to work together, because one of the beauties of the web is one of the few things that is getting closer to write once, run anywhere than any platform. And so without it being interoperable, the features are no good. Additionally, it doesn't matter how interoperable and how great your features set is if you're crashing all the time or they're slow and unusable. So you need all three of these things in actuality to make a great browser. There's certain browsers that just shove as many features in there and like, sweet, look at our score on these things. But that isn't what necessarily makes a great browser. So at Microsoft Edge, what we're trying to always do is find that intersection for each release to ensure that we're providing our mutual users the best experience as possible. So we end up getting feedback from a number of channels. Some of them you've already heard about. We'll go through some of those as well in a little bit more in depth. We get feedback from our users directly on what they do and don't like. We get feedback from you, web developers and designers, on what you want us to be working on. With some of the largest sites on the planet, from our partners, such as Pinterest, for example, and our internal partners, Office, Outlook, and also business goals that we have for Microsoft. We end up getting multiple inputs, bugs, feature requests, data, standards, and those Microsoft business goals end up rolling in to determine the relative priority of what we work on. We roll this information up, as you heard earlier, onto status.microsoftedge.com. And this is just a great site, if you haven't gone to it, to see what we are working on, where it ranks, what browsers support it, whether or not it's low, medium, or high priority on our backlog. And so how do we determine that low, medium, or high? Well, we need to look at those actual inputs that we do take into account, starting with bugs. All software has bugs. Has anybody found a bug in Microsoft Edge at all? Anybody at all? Wow, there's a lot less hands. We can just go home. This is great. All right, so you can provide bugs numerous ways. It's right in the drop-down, report an unsafe site. Say that there's a site issue via the feedback hub, whether it's a feature request or an issue. But for web developers and designers, we launched last year issues.microsoftedge.com. We launched this specifically because it gives you the capability of providing us with more information, such as whether it repros in other browsers. It allows us to converse with you directly. So maybe the content on the site changed, but we still want to reach out to you and say, hey, do you by chance have a way for us to reduce this problem so that we can go still address that site and that problem? After launching this last year, Leah Veru, a wonderful web developer and designer, I highly recommend following her and reading her books. You'll definitely level up your web development capability, tweeted it out and asked, I would file so many more bugs on browsers if I could just submit them via Twitter. A few of us looked around the office and were like, why not? I mean, these are great. These are reductions. They're automatically actionable by our developers. So all you have to do is send us a tweet, as you can imagine, with a reduction. And basically a reduction is the smallest amount of code as possible to repro the issue. So, hey, this box is red and it should be green. And then basically the text surrounding it becomes the title within the bug, hashtag it, and we end up replying to you with the issues link so that you can go follow it or what you would like. But we want as much of that as possible so we can encourage and improve the web platform. all the ways to filing these bugs come back to our team foundation server in the back end. We triage, we prioritize. We get these onto the teams that need them in order to make the best decisions, and then also sometimes put them on the milestones of when they're gonna be worked on. So the question comes back to, how do bugs influence the priority? Well, there's a button that you may not have noticed on this subpage, and it's just called Me Too. And this is an important button because in the back end, this rolls up into a num instance, basically a counter. And when we dupe bugs, even if you didn't click the Me Too button, we also increase this counter because we live under engineering constraints just like everybody in this room. And so if we only have time to fix two bugs, we go with the one that's gonna have the biggest impact. So it's very important that you file the bugs. You're actually helping out your future self as well as future web developers by filing the bugs on us. We also take into account feature requests. This is the one I think when interacting with web developers is the one they get the most excited about, the one that they wanna talk about all the time. When is the new shiny stuff gonna come? And we get feature requests from multiple different venues, in person, like conferences like this. In the last fiscal year alone, we sponsored, spoke at, or attended, to get that feedback, dozens, this is just a few of them, dozens events in order to get that feedback. Our ecosystem team, and I love this, goes out and meets with some of the largest sites out there, including LinkedIn, and here they are over at Pinterest, and they run an exercise called the $100 exercise. And basically what we do is we walk in the room and we say, what don't you like about Microsoft Edge? And as you can imagine, we start compiling a list and trying to understand that list a little bit better. And then about 30 minutes in, we ask the question, we say, okay, if you only had $100 to spend, how would you allocate it to this list? And it's great because even people within that room, you have people that are JavaScript developers, you have designers, you have people in CSS, they don't even agree on how to allocate that money. And then so you quickly find where the nuisances are and their real pain points are. We've had people give $100 solely to dev tools, as you heard Jacob speak to. That's one of the reasons why we have been investing so heavily in that space. And you may be sitting there saying, Greg, that's great that you go to these conferences and that you go to these big websites. I don't attend conferences. I don't go to a lot of websites, but you've heard about this. We care about your voice, and that's why we launched, if I can click it, uservoice.microsoftedge.com. This is a great site that is similar to the $100 exercise. You get an allotment of votes. You're able to go into any feature, and you're able to vote for those. And then when you vote for those, if we begin implementation on it, we email you and let you know, hey, we've begun implementation on it. We gave your votes back. You're able to then go vote on something else that you would like us to be working on. The astute among you may go to this site, and I've had this question on Twitter. Hey, I went there and I noticed that Shadow DOM and custom elements are the top requested feature. Why aren't you working on it? And I think it's important to always point back to, it is one input. It is not the input. And so there's always a lot of context, and I'll go through a few more examples later in the talk of the engineering realities. We wrote a blog post on this recently where our DOM has been going through a multi-year re-architecture effort. And anybody in this room understands when you're rebuilding something, you don't build on top of it. That's not the only reason we haven't necessarily moved in that, but it's one of the largest reasons. To scope in a little bit, I'm on the layout team, so we get to do a lot of cool CSS stuff. But just to show you, in Edge 15, we shipped CSS variables. At the time, that was the top-ranked feature. Position, sticky, object fit, and CSS grid are shipping next release. It was an awesome release for CSS, by the way. I'm just super stoked about Edge 16. Position, sticky, and object fit were 1 and 2 when we began implementation, and CSS grid was in 3rd or 4th place at the time. It's important to know that we actually began implementation all at the same time, but we wanted to announce CSS grid a little bit later at an event apart, and that's why it ended up getting so many more votes. I also think it's important to understand that with each and every single one of these inputs, there's subdata to analyze as well. We can't just look at votes and go, oh, that's definitely the most impactful. Because let's take a look at the user voice trends here. 2014 to 2017, you'll notice we pretty much have no votes for the majority of the time that this feature has existed. And then there's a massive spike in 2017. This is actually CSS grid. And usually what this tells us is that the spike is usually due to a thought leader requesting it in a talk, a blog post on Twitter, or something of that nature. And Jen Simmons, a designer advocate at Mozilla, did just that, and we saw it spike drastically. That doesn't nullify the votes, but it does tell a different story than necessarily all of you just saying, hey, we really want to go have CSS grid, let's go vote for it. Additionally, here's another trend over the same time period. You'll notice consistent voting is occurring over and over again. And this is for object fit. Has half the votes, but this paints a different picture. This is a common problem now, today, What is happening is web developers are working on it, they're showing it to their designers, and they're like, ah, why doesn't it look great in Edge? This stinks. And so they go to Stack Overflow or their favorite forum, and they find out, oh, they don't implement it. We need to vote for it. So they go vote for it. So this is, again, how we can understand the underlying data to help inform our decisions to make the best impactful decision for not only the web developers, but our shared users. Speaking of data, we covered the external data last year, data.microsoftedge.com. So we'll quickly cover it here today. But we have the API catalog, and this has the DOM APIs cross standards, as well as the various browsers. You can compare any three to see the overlap between them. This is great when trying to make decisions on. CSS usage also is built on our Azure Interop crawler. It gives us the capability of seeing every CSS property that is utilized on the site, as well as the sites utilizing, the values that are used. And I really want to do a great call out to our friends over in Mozilla. Last year, if you saw my talk, we weren't able to crawl with Mozilla. They actually made a product adjustment for us so that we can run with them so that when we're working in the W3C, we're able to discuss and make informed decisions regarding Mozilla properties as well. The web is massive. It would be naive and ignorant for us to just solely use our own data in order to make decisions. So we also look at our competitors' information as well. And we have discussions with them regularly on what they've seen web compat. We also go look at GitHub repos to see what you all are using as well, just again to have as many data endpoints as we can. And while all this external data is useful, we also have in-product telemetry, which is approved telemetry from our users to help make the product better for them. This includes crash stacks. So when a site crashes, we can go to the URL, we can make it so that it no longer crashes for you and your users. This means intermittent hang. So when you see this wonderful thing, this could be to a web developer writing a terrible while loop, or it could be optimizations that we need to make in our engine in order to make it so the entire experience on the Edge HTML is better. This also includes DOM API counts. And for some reason on this session, somebody's calling console.log way too many times. But this gives us the capability, again, to make performance and business decisions in a prioritized and realistic way to make the biggest impact for our users. A good example of this telemetry is seen in independent rendering, which will be coming out in next month. We actually shipped it in IE11. Todd will be going more in depth on this a little bit later on, but to give you a quick overview, the main thread, also something we refer to as the UI thread, is where the majority of the work is done. You can see here that we're doing some content processing, and then we do rendering, and then maybe there's some style invalidations that we do, and so we need to redo some more work in the engine, and then we have content that we need to paint and we render again as well. In IE11, we shipped the independent rendering capability where we were able to move the painting, the composition to another thread. The thing is we weren't able to accomplish this for everything, so we prioritized it accordingly, but then also wisely added in the telemetry, so if we ever our users went to this slow path, we would understand why, so that we could, again, go fix those issues in a prioritized manner. In some of the perf clubs our perf team was doing, they started kind of seeing this as a reoccurring theme that people were falling back, and so we went and looked at the telemetry, and 98% of it was due to complex SVG, the canvas element, and the select control is why we were falling back to these paths. And so in Edge 16, these now all independently rendered so that our users, when they touch the screen, they get that wonderful perceptive performance improvement of the browser automatically rendering that content, even if we're still doing work on the UI thread to provide them with the updated content. Standards. This is the one, I would say, if I looked back, this is the one that is most misunderstood. Because you know what's interesting is when I worked on a browser, I always wanted and I always believed in standards. I really love the goal and the drive for standards. And I think inherently, all of us as web developers, when we work with a browser, we want to believe that the browser that we're using is adhering to standards. And I think it's important to understand that just because something is implemented does not mean it's standard. For example, you heard about CSS Grid earlier. We've had MS Grid in our browser since IE10. That doesn't necessarily mean it was a standard yet. A good example of a question that we commonly get is, hey, how come you don't implement WebP? There is no spec or standard for that. Basically, we get pointed to the Chromium Blink code. To make this more confusing, just because there's a spec doesn't mean it's ready to implement. And so I actually have a great example of where this occurred with our wonderful MC, Patrick Kettner, actually. We were at the CSS working group in August and the face-to-face here in Mozilla's office. And they're trying to solve a really, really good use case of vertical rhythm. You actually see it in print all the time where the line of text are aligned with each other in columns. And he sent me this tweet in a DM and was like, I love this, it's in Chrome, I want this like yesterday, this is awesome. He's just super excited about it. But I had just been literally like 2 days before in a meeting where Firefox, David Barron in this case, was saying, I'm discouraging people from implementing it because I don't want to implement this in this manner. And I think it's important to understand he's not saying the use case, he's saying just the current state of the spec. So what this tells us is, hey, we have engineering constraints. We know the spec is going to change drastically. That's nothing against the spec. We'll iron those issues out, and we'll go work on it. But this is why we're not necessarily going to jump in and go implement this right now. None of us want another Flexbox where it's constantly changing and everybody's snapping to different points, and we just have this interoperable mess until we finally were able to get the spec in a stable state and everybody could align on that. Additionally, Elika, who's on, it feels like pretty much every CSS spec, also was saying, hey, I don't feel this is well designed. Again, this is not to bash Rhythm Exciting. This is just to say this is context that we have at times, that this is why, for example, on status, it shows up as medium. We're not necessarily against the spec. We're not at times. Sometimes we are. But at times, there are things that we have context of why we aren't making it a high priority, because we don't want to go implement this and then end up having to re-implement it again because it's changed so much. So ultimately, as you heard Jacob actually say, I can click the button. Come on. I'm definitely pushing. There we go. Help us help you. File bugs on us. I feel like I'm definitely pushing the button. There we go. File bugs on us. Issues or bugs.microsoftedge.com. Please file bugs on us. We definitely want to make the web platform better for you. But again, because it's not just us, file bugs on Mozilla if you find them. File bugs on WebKit if you find them. File bugs on Chrome if you find them. It's important to note, even if you don't know it's our fault, we'll end up going and looking at the spec and we'll work with the other browser vendors. So there's much more cooperation here than I think people actually understand. And we truly want to make everything better. So here's one slide. Please, everybody take a picture, because I was forced to add one slide with all of them on there. Take a picture of it. Share it on Twitter. Please file bugs with everybody. And another thing, please go vote. Your votes do matter. It is very important to vote for the things that you want so that we can ensure to make the web platform what you want it to be. And then when we say it's in development, vote again. It is easy to yell at us on Twitter. It is easy to vote. A remarkable impacting thing is to use progressive enhancement to use it on a production site. I cannot stress this enough. Please, go use the technologies you love. Use them in a progressive enhancement manner so that all of our users are still getting a great experience, but the users in the browsers that support something are getting a richer experience. We are watching telemetry. We're looking, that's why we have the interop crawler, so we can go see what things that we don't implement are being used on the web. Please go use them. Make noise. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Greg Warworth. Please let me know anything. I don't really care what it's about. I will help you make sure that we get the inputs that we need. Blog and give talks. I'm not saying everybody needs to become a developer or evangelist, but if something bugs you, if you want the standards bodies to do something or a browser engine to work on something, please make noise about it. We're all listening, I think, again, to my previous self way more than I think we even realize. So please make noise about it. You'll notice I haven't covered one of them. I'm not ignorant. I know you're not naive. I work for Microsoft. And this is something that we take into account. And I actually asked this very question when I was interviewing at Microsoft, and I feel this is a great talk to finally put this discussion to bed. Why do we even build Edge HTML? Why? Why do we work on this browser engine? Because we strongly believe that no one company or entity should control the web. We strongly believe that. That's why we're involved in the standards bodies. And that's why we do what we do. Well, what does that mean? To put it a little bit of a different way, Jake Archibald of Google says, browser diversity is good for the web. And in my opinion, even a little bit better, Peter O'Shaughnessy of Samsung Internet says, browser diversity is what makes the web the web. And so I totally sympathize with you all when you hit interop bugs and it drives you crazy during your testing. But having browser diversity is what makes the web the web. So how does Edge HTML improve the web? How do we make it better? Through responsible resource utilization. We showed in 2016 that we have leading in-class battery life support among browsers. When the service team goes and spends years in R&D building beautiful hardware and software, and the number one used application on the operating system is not using those resources reliably, won't call out names, but some eat up all of the RAM, we need to be utilizing those resources responsibly. And guess what? Doing this puts pressure on other competitors to do the same. Finally, enhanced security. You heard from Nathan this morning that the vulnerable exploits have gone down year over year. This is something that you cannot do without control of the compiler, the operating system, and the web browser. This is something that's been years in the making and something we are thrilled to be able to achieve. This is something that helps out both our shared users to ensure that they are having a safe time browsing the web. And finally, since everybody loves to talk about features, innovation. Innovation such as Windows 8. And no, I'm not referring to the start screen. I am referring to, at that time, PWAs are great and I'm super excited about it, but making the web platform a first-class citizen in native applications is not new at Microsoft. At Windows 8, there was a decision that was made, hey, store applications should be able to use Edge HTML to render content. HTML and CSS and JavaScript are first-class citizens on Windows. And as people began to move away from XAML and the Windows Presentation Foundation, they quickly realized they couldn't do two-dimensional layout. One-dimensional layout they could do, and they could hack together two-dimensional layout, but there was a massive gap. And so we noticed that, and we said, you know what? This is a problem that we need to solve. And we solved it in IE10, and then brought it to the standards bodies and the web community, and everybody worked together to produce what is now CSS Grid. We got together, and we produced a short little synopsis of this history, and we're excited to share that with you today.
The web has always been traditionally very document-centric.
So people have always been asking for better layouts.
Most of the conversations ended up the same way. They complaining about all the dirty hacks they had to do.
The hacks that we were employing weren't as powerful as the old methods of just put it all in a big old table element. That was popular for a reason. It let you do powerful, complex layouts. It was just the worst thing to maintain and the worst thing for semantics.
I wanted to see some of the technologies that I had worked with previously from the Windows Presentation Foundation, Stack Panel, Wrap Panel, and Grid Layout. The Flexbox spec filled that Stack Panel and Wrap Panel gap, so we were left with, how do we fill the gap for Grid? We're gonna need to make a new spec, and we're gonna need to build it. And so that's what we did.
We wanted Grid to be more than what the developer world thought they needed. What they thought they needed was the things that they could do already.
And so we've been working on it since then for 5 years or so actively now.
To make CSS what it was meant to be, which was to be a flexible, robust, powerful, and understandable system for doing layout.
It actually provides web authors with the capability of doing web application layout in a sane, practical manner without extra markup like tables, without hacks like floats, without all the necessary JavaScript overhead that you need with absolute position.
It allows you to do style development in a sort of different way. You create a template, you create your grid first, you pull content into that.
It lets us do amazing page layouts that were previously only really possible to do with table-based stuff.
After reading the spec for the first time, I thought, oh, wow, this really has the potential to change everything.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, this is something that we really need, is this ability to properly lay things out. So I started sort of digging into it and building some kind of examples to show other people. And I was absolutely determined that Grid Layout wasn't going to disappear. It was going to be something that other people found out about and got excited about.
The thing that changed it from a dream to reality here was getting an implementer deeply interested in it, which in this case was Microsoft first leading with its version of the Grid spec.
It takes both the users who are demanding the feature as well as the browser developers who are dedicating their resources to go and build this.
The developer feedback has been remarkable with all the major browser vendors implementing it and shipping it in 2017. It's not just something we're talking about, they can go use it.
We should have maybe pushed more. I think the grid is something we should have had probably from very early on, maybe from the start of CSS already.
Awesome, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.